Thanks for joining us on KPUPLP Patagonia 100.5 FM Community Talk. I'm your host, Julie Holding. Community Talk alternates weeks with Charlotte Lowe's show at the same time, 5 p.m. Sundays, on KPUP, Patagonia Community Radio. Now I'm pleased to introduce Meredith Milstead. Meredith's colleagues at the drawing studio in Tucson consider her a master of drawing from observation and a master teacher of drawing. Here in Patagonia, Meredith teaches drawing classes held at Patagonia Creative Arts Association, classes I have very much enjoyed. Welcome, Meredith.
Thank you, Julie.
Meredith, what would you say to our listeners who may be thinking that they can't draw, but they've always kind of been interested and maybe trying?
Well, I would say that drawing is for anyone and everyone. Learning drawing skills does not require special talent. All it requires is a willingness to learn and a quiet place to observe. And, of course, hopefully a good drawing teacher.
So what kinds of things does a good drawing teacher do to help someone who thinks they can't draw?
Takes it slow, starts with the basics, creates a comfortable environment where people don't feel competition with each other, helps and identifies each student's needs, the way that they learn, the way that they can, what interests them, in other words. So
help for someone who's never been in a drawing class, what's the first activity that you would do to help someone get started seeing in a new way in order to put something down on paper?
We'd like to start with the identification of shapes and more importantly, the observance of edges of shapes. So, and those are basic, you know, the basic skill building exercises, which include contour drawing, and blind contour drawing, where the individual is not looking at the paper, they're not watching themselves draw, they're not evaluating what's happening in front of them, they're just following the edge of an object at a very slow pace. And this activity, coordinates the eye and the hand. So basically it's a kinesthetic type of activity. It doesn't really have anything to do with making art. It's just a quality of observation. And that's where we start. And from there we go to shape identification and then some proportional measuring and then measuring of objects in proximity to each other. So how they relate to each other, some linear perspective, and then composition and so on and so forth.
So it sounds like a lot, just from what you were saying, a lot of the focus is really on seeing and doing rather than on judging the product.
Absolutely, yes. It's a way to increase skills of observation of the visual world. So more than self-expression or creativity or whatever. That's for you to do yourself.
And for the title that you suggested we put on the poster, you said awareness and observation. And what did you mean by awareness in that context?
So when one sits to observe the world, whatever one pays attention to, they become more aware of. So in this instance, if you are, you know, drawing the edge of a cup for half an hour, you're going to become a lot more aware of the edge of that cup, you know, in your day-to-day. You become more acquainted with the objects you use daily. It really doesn't matter what you draw as long as you're paying attention to it. So it enriches your visual and even tactile experience of objects in your world. So awareness is generated that way.
And I can, when you mentioned drawing the edge of a cup for a long period of time. I can remember when I first started drawing, the temptation was to just do it quickly and not really look at the ellipse that might have been formed by the edge of the cup because I wasn't looking directly down on it or directly from the side and some of those other things. And once I started trying to perceive how to draw the shape as being not perfectly round, then it got very difficult.
Interesting, yeah.
Can you say more about that in the context of awareness and observation?
Sure. What tends to happen when with the beginning drawer is that they already have sort of a clip art file or a symbol dictionary in their minds of what things are supposed to look like. And this is how we learn to write words. You know, we learn first we're introduced with the image of a dog, then we're given the word dog, and then we discard this sort of symbol image of the word dog to be replaced by a dog. And we talk about dogs and all this, and we all know what it is that we're all talking about. But to draw a dog is not to draw the symbol of a dog. So when one is confronted with what they think they know about a dog, you know, before they sit to draw it, it's confusing. And the more confusing something is, the more complex, visually complex it is, the more daunting the task seems to be able to draw it. So the habit that I work to encourage students in is not to access that file of clip art or symbol image that they have, and just stay with what it is in front of them, and by tracing the edge of it with their, and not looking at the paper, you know, not going, when you, once you take your eye off of your subject, you are no longer with it. You are in your head. You're in, and this beautiful world of image symbolism, which is not going to help you draw what's in front of you. So, and that takes some serious effort to, as a student especially, to lose that compulsion to want to first draw quickly and second to draw it like you think it is.
Speaking of that difference between the symbolic and the drawing from observation, does the experience of trying to see in a new way in order to accurately draw something enhance other activities in life or other perceptions?
Good question. So trying to see or practicing these the skills which develop your ability to observe can help you in infinite ways, and not just as perhaps a student of art or a student of who wants to turn your drawings into paintings or whatever. So any vocation which requires observation, and you can, you know, cross the board there, police detective work, you know, where you must identify visual cues and remember them. As we know, the visual memory is poor, and one can often forget details, which happens. Studying wildlife. Environmental impact, you know, studying, you know, watching glaciers fall apart, I think. Ornithology, aeronautics, any number of vocations that require visual interpretation of facts and data and that kind of thing. And essentially, anything that it will help you to be able to observe not indiscriminately, but objectively, in other words, so that you're not bringing more information to the situation, assumptions than is already there. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm reminded listening to you say that. I was reminded of a conversation I had with a friend last night who was describing how her grandfather had done so much sailing in his life that he could read the water way, way, way off in the distance, and understand what he was seeing in a way that was surprising to other people who could not or had trouble seeing what he could see.
Yes,
that's perfect. Does that relate to what you're saying?
Absolutely, perfectly, absolutely. As a visual artist, or as somebody who's interested in gathering visual data, what happens to you is that your perception will change as you become more attuned to what it is that you're observing over time. So you develop sensitivities to it that normal individuals who don't practice don't have. And so, you know, for example, in your example, this individual seemed to have skills that were beyond, you know, maybe normal perceptual skills. Well, because he'd studied and practiced and observed over time, and related these observances to a purpose, they worked for him. Or in the, especially sailing is an excellent example of needing to use observational skills, you know, just to save your life, you know, meteorology, those kinds of, and it's been practiced ever since we became interested in our environments, which is, I'm sure, when we started living, you know, I don't know how many, 35,000 years ago or whatever.
As human beings.
Yes, uh-huh. Yes. So. Uh-huh.
Well, cave art, mm-hmm. was, I mean, did people start making art from the very earliest days of being human beings?
Well, and cave art does date back to, let's see, 30,000 years? Anyway, pretty far back. And mark making is definitely inherently human activity. So whether they were making art is debatable or questionable, but certainly recording their world on the walls of the cave with drawing tools, which probably were made of charcoal and ground pigments, which is what we do today. So it hasn't changed very much.
Well, what about the relation between the skills and the perceptions that a student learns in a drawing class and 21st century media? What can you say about that?
Oh, so learning to observe, learning to draw helps or may enhance students' awareness to the methods of image makers like designers, illustrators, architects, marketers. So when you understand the building blocks of these visual communications, well, you can decipher more, perhaps more sensitively, what it is, what they're trying to do, in other words. So it generated an awareness of visual communication, and its effect on the choices that you make in your day-to-day life is very important, I think, for, you know, informed, to be informed about the choices that you make. So
when I grew up, before the days of the internet, and I'm just amazed at how much visual imagery I see every day. Mm-hmm. And as a child, I mean, we had TV, but I'm pretty sure it was a black and white TV, you know, and we didn't watch a lot of TV when I was really little. And so there weren't as many kind of visual images, mm-hmm. as there are now. Mm-hmm. It just seems like they're everywhere.
Yeah. It seems like people used the voice to influence. Now it's the image. And, well, any image that's generated on a computer screen is generated from somebody who understands the systems of translating 3D to 2D, which is what you learn.
What do you mean by 3D and 2D?
So the sort of the three-dimensional world, the world that we live in and move through, and objects that we touch with our hands and that we use for other things. To know an object three-dimensionally, I guess you could say, is to understand it and utilize it differently than you would if it was two-dimensional. But that two-dimensional image that you create from the three-dimensional image carries with it the same meaning that the 3D image has. Mm-hmm. And so when you project these images onto a screen, they embody a lot more than just this flat shape that you've created. They speak to experiences you've had, or and that's how advertisers, that's why we eat purple colored candy, because it, not because it's practical, but because it appeals to our visual sensibility and, and it maybe obviously our gustatory, how does it, is it gooey, what kind of texture does it have? That's definitely an important part of that. But to convey that in a two-dimensional image, that's what the drawing student or the student learning skills learns how to do. So once you know how to do that, then you can basically influence people however you want them to be influenced, or whatever you want to convey. Is I'm not sure if that answering your question.
Yeah, you are.
But the power of the television screen or the computer screen is much more than just just showing us a bunch of things, a bunch of two-dimensional images moving around. It's speaking to parts of our perception or our consciousness that we're not aware of necessarily. We get pulled into these things and into these worlds that we can exist in very, very comfortably, but it's a man-made artificial,
it's kind of a virtual world.
It's artificial.
Even shopping, shopping for clothes,
right,
online.
Exactly.
We don't get to touch them anymore. We just get to look at the image that
and imagine what they might be like. And also, images are manipulated to enhance their consumerability, or to want you to purchase them. I mean, models in catalogs are often much taller and skinnier than they would ever appear in normal life. So, things look better on them than they do, maybe. This happens all the time, Mm-hmm. So understanding how to manipulate 3D into 2D, how to create these images, helps you to understand how other people have done it also. Mm-hmm. So, and you can just look at the fantasy movie industry, with all this the computer animation and this is really kind of an interesting phenomenon that's happening, where they're combining fantasy world and real world in a way that it's obvious that there's something that's been generated, and it's actually a little bit of a teaching tool in a way to show us that what we are looking at really does not exist, but it's fun anyway. So,
Wow. It's really interesting to be learning about all of these kind of other dimensions of the experience of drawing and how it can enhance the rest of our lives beyond what happens in the art class or what happens at home while practicing drawing. And thinking about practice as the art of practice or the practice of drawing, what would you say are the benefits of a daily drawing practice?
All right. So they're infinite, in my opinion. I mean, that's practicing the art of looking is, for me, a joy. And what it does for me is it focuses, it calms, it establishes a real communication with the world that I live in. It helps me to be more grounded. And helps me to make better decisions, and I would assume that is what would hopefully happen in a serious student of drawing. Practice. What practice also does is it helps to the student to internalize the systems learned in a drawing class so that they don't have to think about what it is they're doing all the time, you know, just like driving a car. Once you learn, then you're free to roam. But in the initial stage, it's not easy, and it's stop and go. But establishing a practice helps you get through that initial stage of stop and go, and becomes a habit.
When you said systems of drawing, mm-hmm. can you define what that, or just give a sense of what that is?
Okay. So systems are. Of drawing are ways that we or methods that we use to translate 3D to 2D. So they're rules that you follow. So for example, if you want to draw light effects, the system for drawing light is called the value system, as well as identifying values. And there's usually a scale of values. It's called a grayscale.
And by value, you mean how dark or light it is?
Yes, how dark or light something is. So the system of drawing value is that, part of the system is anyway, that whatever face of the object is closest to the light source will always be the highest value, you know, of your, say you're drawing an apple or an orange or a sphere or something, whatever part of that is closest to the light source will be your highest value. There is in very, very few circumstances, and I can't think of any, where your highest value would be elsewhere, unless you were creating a fantasy situation or something. So, there are other values assigned to different parts of this sphere that are fairly regular. Across the board whenever you draw a sphere with a light source. And so that would be a system of drawing value.
So it's like specific things that a student can learn mm-hmm. to look for.
Yes.
And then to record on the page every time they're drawing.
Right.
So it sounds like it takes some of the, I don't know what the right word is, but that place of students have when they just don't know where to start. It takes
yes.
that out of
yes.
the equation.
It sets a course.
People know
yes.
how to start.
Yes. It also helps you see what you may not see yourself to begin with. Maybe you don't see the six other little values that are happening in the shadows of the sphere on the table. But if you know that they should be there, then you develop a sensitivity to looking for them and find them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting how that works.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely about discovery. But the systems do, they keep you on track, and they, you know, it's not just you're not just making this up. So it's kind of comforting.
Yes, it is. I mean, it
right.
sounds comforting, but I've experienced it as
mm-hmm.
being very comforting
mm-hmm.
because it takes that kind of, oh no, how do I do this?
Yeah, the unknown. Yeah,
yeah, and makes it seem possible
yes,
to do it.
Yes.
Well, let's take a minute and step back and just cover a few basics, maybe some information about you, some information about the drawing studio, about Patagonia Creative Arts, and then about some upcoming classes.
Okay.
So why are you an artist?
Well, it's what I do best, yes. And it's not just what I think, it's what everyone else thinks too. So it's helpful to know that I'm supported. And I've been doing it for a long time, and I have a special way of a sensitivity to my environment, which I need to express in order to feel equanimity in the world, you know, to feel good about who I am and what I'm doing and everything's all right. So practicing drawing is definitely one of those things, and making artworks is another way to express what's happening inside of me.
Mm. And what's your academic background?
So I have 2 degrees from the University of Arizona, a Bachelor in Fine Arts in Drawing, Printmaking, and Painting, and a Bachelor of Arts in Art History. And that's from the U of A. I also spent quite a bit of time traveling throughout Europe as a young person growing up with a family very interested in art and culture. So I was exposed to a lot of artworks and architecture and literature, you know, firsthand from the source, which is always nice too. It's a good way to experience these things. It has a lasting impression. So, and you know, and my education, you know, aside from my degrees, has it's continuing all the time. So mm-hmm. I study with local artists here in town. I take workshops around the country. You know, I'm always interested in learning more. So, mm-hmm.
So how did you get connected with the drawing studio?
So that's an interesting story. I was working and still do work as an art conservation specialist in oil painting, and I needed to know the palette for an 18th century portrait. So I needed to know what colors these artists used, and I signed up to learn this from Mariana Carreras, who was a teacher of oil painting. Portraiture, classical portraiture, and she still teaches at the drawing studio. And I learned from her what how to mix my colors. And mm-hmm. And once I was in the drawing studio, I was addicted. You know, I was like, what is this place? And I saw it, and so I just started taking classes just to get back into the arts, because I did spend a little bit of time away from them after I graduated college. Mm-hmm. So once I was in, I was hooked.
So. Tell us about the drawing studio briefly. What's its purpose?
So the drawing studio, founded by and directed by Andy Rush, who is a noted printmaker and arts educator. The purpose of the drawing studio is to increase the skills of visual intelligence for anyone, any walk of life. So it's not really about making artists. It's about increasing visual intelligence, which we believe helps enriches the life experience. So,
and what could you give us a sense of what makes classes at the drawing studio different than other classes?
So the drawing studio. Encourages the new student to begin with drawing fundamentals, which are learning these systems of translating 3D to 2D. And then from there, it offers the student any number of different disciplines, you know, painting, drawing, printmaking, graphic illustration, architectural rendering, and then also goes into mediums, watercolor, colored pencil, and then also genres, figurative, landscape, still life, and whatnot. So they believe that a good grounding in art happens with drawing fundamental skills. And that is different than a lot of or other organizations. It's not, you know, it's just specific to the drawing studio that they really believe strongly in giving the student the skills, the basic skills first. So,
and then why did you reach out to Patagonia Creative Arts Association?
Oh, well, I in my own artwork, my own art practice, I am very attracted to the landscape and botanical forms, evidence of human and animal presence in the landscape, changing, you know, biodiversity, these things. I enjoy very much hanging out in areas where there's nature. And I totally grabbed the opportunity when they were looking for somebody to start teaching drawing in Patagonia to do this, because I saw it as my ticket out of the city. And the scenic drive is absolutely fabulous. And the small town sort of or rural community feel and camaraderie of Patagonians and Southern Arizonans is very I don't know, it's just it's warm, it's careful, it's, you know, it's friendly, it's nice to be around the small town feel. It's different than the city, you know, it's more personal. People talk to each other on the street. They you know, the drawing classes would not be a success in Patagonia if it hadn't been for word of mouth and just personal interest in these classes. So I you know, the qualities of Patagonia have made these classes happen. So that's why I like to come down here.
Well, it'd be nice to focus on the Art Center for just a moment. I hope to have a chance to interview their executive director, Gail Jacobson, this spring. But in the meantime, I spoke with Faye Finley just to get a brief overview for the show. And their purpose is primarily to provide art experiences for kids. They also have the Tin Shed Theater. They do a club theater program for ages 9 through 12. And they're run by grants and donations. And they offer space available for others to do workshops and classes. So how long have you been teaching drawing at the Art Center in Patagonia?
Let's see. I'd like to say 2.5 years, approximately.
And what kinds of classes are you offering here in Patagonia?
So we began by offering drawing fundamentals. And from that base, from the students who took the drawing fundamentals, we then created a course of intermediate drawing and with attention to individual projects. So what we've been able to do, what we're able to offer now, is the drawing fundamentals part one, which is an 8-week course, which meets once a week on Monday afternoons, and then which segues into drawing fundamentals part two. And it's good to take both in succession because they build on each other, which is another 8-week course. And then from there, the student can take a class entitled The Poetics of Drawing, which is a new class I'm offering, which helps the student find ways to express their feelings more. You know, using drawing skills, we talk about intention more, what it is you want to depict, and then how to do it. So a lot of the classes focuses on different techniques to create different marks, but one still needs to understand, you know, the systems. So it's a freer class. It's more experimental. You know, it's for the intermediate drawer. And then this last class that has had quite a bit of success is, and I'm changing it a little bit, but it's entitled Independent Projects in Drawing and Painting. And it's for the individual who has a drawing or painting practice, regular practice, who would like feedback, and also to develop perhaps more of a support group in their artistic endeavors. So, you know, painting and drawing can be very solitary activities and solitudinal, but artists need each other. So it's sort of a kind of a type of a forum situation where we come together and talk about the work. So those are the classes I'm offering at the Patagonia Arts Center.
And when do they start?
They start on February 15th, and that's Drawing Fundamentals Part 1, and the first, I believe it's the Poetics of Drawing also starts on the 15th. We try to have two classes, a session there on Mondays. So February 15th. And you can find out more about it in the Drawing Studios newsletter.
And how do people find that?
Right. So they can call the Drawing Studio, or they can find online. They can find us online at thedrawingstudio.org. So www.thedrawingstudio.org.
And the newsletter is also at the Art Center.
Yes.
And there's a pile of newsletters at the library.
Yes,
in excellent. Patagonia.
Wonderful. Okay.
So if people want to see the hard copy,
right,
it's right there. And it has the registration form and the sign-ups
and
everything.
And we'll also post flyer on the door of the art center. Also, there is another week, one day pastel painting class in at Patagonia Lake. It's going to be taught by Emily McConkie on Saturday, April 17th, and she's teaching through the drawing studio too, just in case you're interested in that.
Okay. Well, as we wind down our interview, would you like to share some personal thoughts on why you enjoy teaching?
Well, sure. teaching. Well, it has only, I've only benefited from teaching. I can tell you that. So, teaching has this, For me, it is the basis for generating meaningful friendships and interactions with other like-minded or other people who are interested in what interests me in the world. So with that, you know, that's pretty heavy. But I also really, I love to bring it down here, you know, because I know it's not easy to find it. And, you know, it's very enjoyable. It can be very enjoyable, and so I like to bring it here. And let's see, what else? Teaching helps my own visual and communications practices wonderfully, because I have to sit down and think about how to explain something to a group of people so that they'll understand. And, you know, while I'm working away in my studio, I don't think about these things. I, you know, it's just fun for me, but what about everybody else? You know, what about sharing? So, and I've had a lot of experiences, and it helps when you share these experiences, it strengthens them. So it's personally, it's very rewarding to me to teach. The whole experience of teaching in Patagonia has been wonderful for me. I'd like to thank a few people if I could.
Yeah, sure.
Primarily, you know, the Patagonia Art Center, wonderful liaison for, you know, creating this opportunity, and the individual who helped start this, who was Faye Finley, and she got the word out and got, you know, and still continues to help me plan and schedule my classes, and she, you know, she's a supporter. So, and then Gail Jacobson, who is the executive director of the mm-hmm. Art Center. Also, individuals in the community who are small businesses, Adrian Halpert at Global Arts has been instrumental in helping us find students or to spread the word, among others. Molly
Finney?
Finney, yes. From what I understand, Molly hosts a Friday art group.
Yes.
Which I believe is comprised of most of the students of the drawing fundamentals classes, and so that is to me that's just a that's the cherry on the cake in terms of, you know, the success of our drawing classes in Patagonia, that there's actually a group that meets on its own to keep it going, and that this and then Molly is instrumental in facilitating that.
Yes,
it's wonderful.
And so, I should let everybody know that last winter this was held on Wednesdays from 10 till 12, and we met at Molly's studio. And over the course of the summer, we have changed the day. And so if anyone's listening and would like to come, everyone's welcome. There's no scheduling, there's no sign up, there's no fee for this. We just all gather, whoever wants to show up. And we're meeting right now at the Art Center from 10 till 12 on Fridays. And when Molly gets back, we may change that. All right. So.
Excellent. I'd also like to thank all my students, or anybody who's ever been interested or come to class, because, you know, that's what makes this happen. And of course, foremost, I'd like to thank Julie Holding, who is a fabulous organizer and very enthusiastic about the drawing and has progressed beautifully.
Thank you.
Yes. So, and also for the radio broadcast too.
Well, thank you. And let's see, let's give that contact information again for people who may want to sign up or learn more about the classes, what's the Drawing Studio's website again?
It's the Drawing Studio, one word, .org.
Okay, and the other contact information can be found at the in the newsletter, mm-hmm. and those are at the library in Patagonia, and they're in the little room in between the side door and the entrance to the main lobby, kind of on for local people. There are these wooden cabinets, and the stack of newsletters is kind of sitting on top of the wooden cabinets. It's the little kind of foyer area as you head towards the restrooms.
The telephone number of the Drawing Studio.
Okay, yes, the telephone number. Do we have that?
Yes, telephone number, area code 520-620-0947. And if you call between Tuesday and Friday, you can register between 9 and 5.
So okay,
it's a telephone registration.
Well, is there any last thing that we should say before we conclude the interview? I think we've covered it.
We've covered a lot, huh?
Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate you making a special trip to Patagonia, Meredith, be on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and you're very welcome. It was a wonderful opportunity to talk about this.
Great. Well, February 15th,
mm-hmm.
I look forward to seeing you back again in Patagonia, if not before.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Community Talk on KPUP LP Patagonia 100.5 FM every other Sunday at 5.